Hi everyone. Today is Monday, October 28th, and we're having Larry Johnson with us. Welcome back, Larry.
I'm pleased to be here, Nima.
Let's talk about the latest information on the conflict. We talk about the Israeli attack on Iran on the night that they did it. Right now, what's your, in your opinion, we have a bigger picture right now. How did you find the attack, Israeli attack on Iran?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. If you listen to the Israelis, excuse me, boy, massive victory. It was, they knocked out every single air defense system that Iran had. They took out the S-300s. They hit military targets. They blew up rocket factories. Great victory. Now, they're delusional. I think the scientific term is, yeah, it's bullshit. So the reality of what happened is Israel's plan was to first throw missiles into Iran, because they were going to fly in there with their own aircraft. They're smart enough to recognize that there were some air defense systems that they might be put at jeopardy of being shot down. So they use standoff air launch ballistic missiles, and the point was to suppress, it's called SEAD, S-E-A-D, suppress enemy air defense. That was their initial objective. That failed. They did not suppress enemy air defense. Yeah, they blew up one or two, but for the most part they didn't. I think they had planned a much more extensive attack with follow-on strikes. In theory, they were going to suppress the enemy air defense, and they're going to hit all these military facilities and drone factories and rocket missile factories. They failed. And you can see part of that failure by, there were some videos posted early on where you could see the interceptions taking place. And what a contrast it was as compared to Iran's strike on Israel on October 1st. There is that now famous video out of Nevatim where you could see strike after strike after strike hitting the ground, and that the Israelis weren't intercepting it. And, of course, then they come up with the excuse, well, we didn't really want to intercept that. It was, we knew it was going to hit something that wasn't important, so we left it alone. We weren't going to rest missiles on it. Good coping skills. I know an ardent Zionist. I can't even call him a friend, because I think he's despicable. But he wrote initially like, oh man, Israel's, they're overwhelming the Iranian air defense, they're taking them out, the nuclear site, it was just like, okay. And then I wrote back, well, not really. And oh boy, he attacked and attacked. Well, 8 hours later, he's singing a different tune. He's going, well, see, this was a limited strike. Israel didn't really want to put everything at risk. Hey, you guys just recognize, from the standpoint of Israel, anybody that's there objectively thinking about it, they should have reached this conclusion. Iran has the capability to penetrate and defeat Israeli air defense systems. Israel does not, I repeat, does not have the capability to penetrate and defeat Iranian air defense systems, in part because you got the Russians helping the Iranians, and the systems proved pretty, not pretty effective, very effective. We know this just by judging the reaction so far of the government of Iran, and just actually sort of Iranian social media. There's no sort of demand for revenge, demand for response, that, what happens when you get punched in the nose and it hurts. They're more like I got this itchy little mosquito bite on my arm, but it's, it was an annoyance, but it wasn't anything, it was no big deal. So we're looking at Israel trying to cope with the realization that it's no longer the mightiest military power in the Middle East. Your sound's off, Nima.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
And they're talking about their fighter jets going invading the airspace of Iran. Do we have any?
No, they didn't. They never did. They never got in there. I mean, they just didn't. If they had, it would have been shot down. So,
it seems that Israel doesn't have capabilities to send missiles from Israel to Iran. They have to carry them by fighter jets, then shoot it at Iran.
No, I think that they've got some ballistic missile capability that can be ground launched. They chose not to use it for whatever reason. I don't know if it's that there's a limited supply or. In their judgment that those missiles would not necessarily be accurate as to what they use by launching from the air. But, you know, again, they tried to say, oh, this was a limited strike. It was 100 friggin' aircraft for the love of God. Really? Limited? It wasn't limited. And if each one of those planes carried, you know, two air-launched missiles, you know, that's a 200 missile barrage. Some are saying that it actually Israel ended up launching close to 600 missiles. So we don't know what the real number is. All we know is that Iran had vowed that if it had been attacked, it was going to retaliate. They haven't retaliated. Not because they were so damaged and so hurt, but because they prevailed. And they prevailed, I think, with the assistance of the Russians, who played a very critical role. Because it's part of it's in Russia's interest to make sure that this thing does not escalate any further than it is at present. They try to keep it contained. And, you know, candidly, I suspect Russian intelligence analysts, and maybe some of the Iranian intelligence analysts, are starting to judge that Israel is now in a war of attrition that it cannot win. And by the losses it's suffering, not just in terms of casualties on the battlefield and equipment, but economically and population that's fleeing, what happens to Israel over the next 6 to 12 months isn't a pretty picture. Because... you know, clearly Hezbollah can sustain and intensify the fight beyond what it already has. And Israel's already suffering the pain of trying to go into southern Lebanon. So the last thing they need is to expand the war. And they can't even fight a one-front war. They can't defeat Hamas in Palestine so far in the Gaza Strip. You know, now that they're in trading blows with Hezbollah, and then active in the West Bank, and then with the Houthis still retaining their capability to attack, and now, trying to expand the war to Iran, Israel's overreached.
If we consider the conflict between Iran and Israel, as a conflict of establishing deterrence, who was capable of achieving that?
Oh, I think Iran was. The typical, and I run across this in some of the comments, like to the, you know, when Andre and I were with you as the attack was underway and commenting on it, some of the comments from some of the more ardent Zionists who come to the site to say, oh, you're all wrong, you don't know what you're talking about. They grab hold of a belief about Israeli military superiority in all things. And you can show them any amount of facts, and it won't shake them off of those facts. They just continue to insist, oh, no, we're right. Okay, but the reality You know, what happened, you know, early Saturday morning in Iran and, you know, late Friday here on the East Coast of the United States was that really for the first time in 70 years, Israel carried out a very high-profile military attack from the air and failed. All the spin, all the stories planted in the New York Times and Jerusalem Post and Haaretz about, oh, we did great, man. We took out all these. The rest of everybody else in the region knows what happened. They go, Iran stopped Israel. You know, they stopped them. You know, because the initial reports out of Israel, they're going to sustain that for like 12 hours. And, you know, they called it off after 3. Well, why? They recognized they were wasting missiles. Now, if their goal was to see if they could attrit Iran's air defense system by forcing them to fire lots of missiles, you know, that could have been a military objective, but that clearly it wasn't. They intended to destroy the air defense systems and a lot of the ground radars, and Israel failed to do so.
Yeah. Larry, if you consider those Arab states together with Turkey after these interactions between Iran and Israel, in your opinion, is the picture of Israel changing in their mind?
You mean among the Israeli population, the Jewish population?
No, I'm talking about the Arab states.
Well, yeah, I think it's starting to change. I think this, you know, this was the assessment of Iran, I think in particular, is changing because they're seeing, you know, what happened in April, the first strike, was a demonstration that Iran had the capability to fire and a variety of weapon systems at Israel. The second strike on October 1st was a clearer message to Israel that we can penetrate your air defense system, that Iron Dome is not impregnable. And now, add to that, it's shown that they could stop an Israeli attack that was intended really to cause, to cripple Iran militarily. You know, I think you may have read what I posted on my sonar21.com, but the comment from this ardent Zionist about, oh, initially, boy, it was, they were working to roll over the Iranians. The Iranians had nothing. They're backward. They're just defenseless. That's not what happened. But, you know, part of my frustration is, can you get the people to actually acknowledge the facts about what happened? And that's very difficult.
Larry, it seems that Israeli media channel well reported that only 3 Hezbollah fighters killed and wounded an entire Israeli force of 20 soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're talking about this in the Israeli media, how could be that the situation between Israel and Hezbollah in the southern part of Lebanon? Because at the end of the day, Netanyahu needs to do something in the southern part of Lebanon with this situation. They have to come to a solution, or maybe, I don't know if they want to continue this conflict in that region.
Well, they're trying to figure out how to, again, extricate themselves. It's a repeat of 2006. 2006, they thought they could roll in there and overwhelm Hezbollah. Now, what Israel is doing, and it's really in sort of sharp contrast to 2006, is they're making far more extensive use of aerial bombardment of cities and villages with Israeli aircraft, and including Christian villages, places that really have nothing to do with Hezbollah or not critical part of Hezbollah's military infrastructure. Israel is engaged in genocide, pure and simple. They are doing nothing but attacking hospitals, schools, humanitarian centers, all in the name of fighting terror. They're using terrorism to fight terrorism. And, you know, those are words coming out of my mouth that I never thought I would say, but it is just a simple fact. And meanwhile, Hezbollah, you know, I'm not the only one that predicted this. You know, Scott Ritter's talked about it. Doug McGregor's talked about it. I think Danny Davis has talked about it. That the Hezbollah forces have an extensive network of tunnels and defensive emplacements in southern Lebanon. And the terrain in southern Lebanon is very difficult. It's a mountainous region. And so there are limited access points, and many of those access points provide an excellent opportunity for setting up ambushes. But that's exactly what Hezbollah is doing to Israel, and it's inflicting, you know, probably almost 10 times the number of casualties that Israel experienced going into Gaza Strip. I mean, Gaza Strip was, you know, cities of people with, you know, no real armed presence of Hamas. Hamas was not a massive military insurgent force. Yeah, they were present, but not anything like what Hezbollah is. And Hezbollah, in contrast to the Hamas fighters, are a bunch of combat-hardened veterans. You know, they fought in Syria. They fought against ISIS. And now they're turning around, and they're being very effective in killing and wounding Israeli soldiers in large numbers. And so you're getting almost daily reports of 2 dead, 5 dead, 4 dead. You know, the other day it was, you know, 8 and 17 wounded, something like that. Israel's not going to be able to sustain that. They can't sustain those kinds of losses. They're not that big.
When you look at the behavior of Israel, they went into Gaza. They failed to achieve anything. And right now, instead of coming out with a solution for the situation in Gaza, or maybe negotiating, they went to southern part of Lebanon. And right now, with this attack on Iran, these interactions between Iran and Israel, it seems that the end game was to bring the United States in to help them to save the situation, because they're not capable of doing this, Larry. In Gaza, in the southern part of Lebanon, right now with Iran, can we say that the United States getting involved on the part of Israel to fight all of these people together, all of these countries together, has failed so far?
Yeah, if that was their objective, certainly it has failed. But, you know, their goal in Gaza is to try to depopulate Gaza, and they're having some success with that. Except they've not opened up a pathway where the Palestinians there in Gaza can leave and depart someplace else. They just keep moving them around like pieces on a chessboard, and, you know, killing them and starving them. You know, they're literally trying to exterminate the Palestinian people. And the inhumanity of it is staggering. And the world so far has stood by idle. Some criticism, some condemnation, you know, writing a stern letter. But there's nothing really that's going to hurt Israel for its conduct. It's remarkable that Israel can point to October 7th as justification for what it's doing. They killed 1,200 of our people. Let's accept that number is true. It's actually, I think, 1,159 is what the Israelis finally came up with. Let's ignore the reality that maybe as much as 50% of those Israeli casualties that day were inflicted by Israel itself. to try to stop Hamas from taking hostages back into Gaza. So, but let's say the full 1,200, count that. And since then, Israel's killed close now, the numbers are approaching 50,000. Minimum, 50,000 men, women, and children. I used to, you know, when I brought this up before with some of these ardent Zionists. Oh, you can't trust those numbers. Those are, the Palestinians are making them up. Well, just the other day, Matthew Miller, State Department spokesman, was just, you know, celebrating the death of Aya Sinwar and said, quote, and Sinwar is responsible for the 40,000 plus deaths of Palestinians in Gaza. I went, oh, he's at least now admitted the number of dead from the State Department. The State Department is even accepting that number. Now, they're blaming Sinwar for killing all the Palestinians. Yeah, I got that right. The Israelis dropped the bombs, but it's the Palestinian fault. Great. That kind of logic. It was the Jews who were responsible for the Holocaust. They killed themselves in those gas chambers. You know, that kind of, please. The fact of the matter is, Israel's campaign to wipe out these Palestinians, it's having some success. Now, the question is, can they sustain it to the point that they'll finally be able to enter? Because already you got the Ben Gavirs and Smotriches claiming they're getting the bulldozers ready so they can go in and start occupying, taking over. They're like ravenous locusts.
Do you think that then Netanyahu is able to sustain the situation in Israel? Because recently there was a funeral in Israel. He was talking and people were protesting, and they were saying that they're not happy with the situation because there is talk. It seems that Israelis are understanding the pain right now.
I don't think so.
Invasion of the southern part of Lebanon, because they're losing their people.
Yeah, well, the realization is starting to dawn on them. But you know, right now, still Netanyahu has the majority support of the population. Yeah, there are some Israelis speaking out, but that. Is my understanding Netanyahu was speaking at a ceremony commemorating the 1 year attack on October 7th, and it was there that he was met with some of the protesters saying, "Now, you know, make peace, you know, reach a negotiation." This idea of making peace presupposes that what's going on between the Zionists and the Palestinian people, and it doesn't matter whether the Palestinians are Muslim, Christian, atheist, doesn't matter. The Zionists believe that that land where those Palestinians are located on right now is there. It belongs to the Zionists. It doesn't belong to these Palestinian people. The ones who, the families that have inhabited places in the West Bank for generations, literally hundreds, going back at more than 1,000 years, that they don't have a right to that land. That belongs to the Jews. And that, and so there's nothing to negotiate here. The only negotiation is how fast you're going to pack up your shit and get out of my land. That's the Zionist mentality. You know, I fully understand why the Palestinians are fighting them. And, you know, if we had magical powers, the reality would be you would go in, you would take all those 700,000 settlers out of the West Bank, force them back into the territory originally ceded to Israel in 1948, go back to the pre-1967 borders, and then put in some real UN muscle which is a contradiction in terms, I realize, an oxymoron. But, you know, put in Russian troops, American troops, Chinese troops, you know, major power countries, so that neither side would dare try to trip, you know, shoot them, attack them, and keep the two sides separate, you know. But that's not going to happen. And so this thing's going to go on. I frankly don't see how Israel sustains itself and remains intact as a country. I don't know how long that will take, but the process, what has transpired over the last year, despite all this support from Zionists in the United States, you don't see all them packing up and saying, man, it's time to move to Israel to stand with our people. They're not doing that. They're getting the hell out. People are leaving Israel to come back to the United States or go, you know, even Bibi Netanyahu's son. I mean, what, he's hanging out in Miami. The trend line for Israel, the trajectory, is not good. And I think what we're going to see in the next week or two is Hamas is really going to intensify its attacks. Again, if I'm the Iranians, you sit there and you start weighing your options to respond to what Israel did Saturday morning in Iran with its attacks. You say, okay, if we launch outwardly, you know, we respond directly. This does run the risk of escalation. It does run the risk of compelling that Israel will feel compelled to use nuclear weapons. So is that our only option? Oh, heavens no. We can boost the capabilities of Hezbollah and the Houthis. We're going to actually give them some weapon systems that they haven't had previously that they will be able to employ against the Israelis. And so using proxies to attack Israel will just further weakens Israel. And then the Israelis got to, you know, they have to figure out, okay, well, what are we going to do? What's next?
In your opinion, does Hezbollah need Iranian forces helping them in Lebanon?
Well, to define that a little bit, I mean, right now Hezbollah is quite capable of continuing sustaining the fight. But any assistance provided from Iran would be quite welcome. You know, so they're not dependent on it, but, it's certainly beneficial. So you can't minimize that as being unimportant.
Larry, when you look at Israel, you talk about people who are supporting Netanyahu right now. And how, in your opinion, in terms of the public opinion in Israel, which is so delusional, because recently when you see a journalist talking about by the assassination of Nasrallah and the commanders, Hezbollah was defeated, just go in the southern part of Lebanon and destroy everything. When a journalist thinking this way, you look at the public opinion, ordinary people mm-hmm. who are not that much familiar with the situation in the southern part of Lebanon. What would be the situation that can bring some sort of sanity to these people who are living in Israel, who are giving the support to Netanyahu?
Casualties. It'd be a combination of casualties and physical destruction inside Israel. So Hezbollah yesterday, on Sunday, had issued an evacuation warning, just like Israel has warned certain areas in Lebanon now, get out, or you're going to be at risk. Hezbollah issued the same to, 25 different settlements in northern Israel. So that tells me they intend to step up attacks. And so you get the combination of these kibbutzim being destroyed and getting hit with some major explosions, doing significant damage, and then casualties, both among Israeli troops and then among Israeli civilians. Israel has really never paid a significant price militarily for its attacks. You know, its attacks, I think combined casualties from the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War, the going into Beirut, Lebanon in 2006, and now this, I think the total KIA from all those combined is fewer than 5,000. I don't want to minimize, 5,000 is still a large number, particularly if it's one of your loved ones. But it's really insignificant compared to the size of the Israeli military force. But if the casualty count starts going up, that all of a sudden, if Israel is lost in, over the course of the next 6 months, they lose 3,000 KIA in southern Lebanon, that's too much. I mean, they will have lost more in 6 months, 7 months in southern Lebanon than the United States lost in Iraq and all of its occupation over 15 years in terms of KIA. So it is, it's the simplest way to put it is the Israeli public's got to feel the pain. They've got to feel the combination of the grief from loss of life and the economic pain because the economy is imploding. Those two things, I think, will help awaken them from their delusional fantasy that they can exterminate the Palestinian people.
We've learned that the director of CIA, together with Mossad, they're talking in Qatar about the situation in Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
Without Hamas being part of these talks with Qataris, and how they can help the situation and how they can come to a solution to find some sort of ceasefire, I don't know, whatever they're looking for.
Well, they're hoping indirectly that the Qataris will put pressure on Hamas to suspend attacks or to surrender. And I don't think Hamas is going to do that. They're too invested in this. This is, ask just people to put themselves in a similar position. If you've got a foreign power, which is what Israel is relative to the Palestinians, attacking and killing your women, your children, destroying your homes, destroying your livelihood. Do you sit back and surrender, or do you fight back? And, they haven't killed all the Palestinians so far, and the Palestinians are going to continue to fight back, and that makes Hamas more attractive because it provides them one way to fight back, a purpose, a meaning. I wish it was otherwise, but I don't see a diplomatic exit on this, simply because what's driving the people driving the car in Israel right now are these Zionist extremists, and they don't broker in any sense compromise with respect to the Palestinians, none whatsoever. This land is our land, is the Zionist refrain.
With the mindset that Netanyahu and his administration are showing us, do you think they're looking for capturing the northern part of Gaza? And is that possible, in your opinion? Getting out of their mind?
No, I don't. If by capture you say that they can secure it, they can take it and then secure it, and there will be no more attacks, no, they can't do that. They can make it unlivable for Palestinian people, which is exactly what they're doing right now. But the notion that some wealthy Jews are going to show up and build a beachside resort where they'll be able to go out and lay in the sun and enjoy the Mediterranean, that ain't happening. I mean, that's what they'd like, but that's not going to happen, simply because Palestinians, the Hamas fighters, aren't going to leave them in peace. They will continue to find a way to attack.
Israel, it seems that Israel is at risk of losing UN membership if it cuts ties with UNRWA. And do you think that right now the UN is getting to the point that finally, they're going to have some sort of standing against Israel, and they're going to show something substantial to Israel and its attitude?
Yeah, no, I personally believe Israel should be thrown out. Absolutely tossed out. You know, the Israel's attacks on the UN, actual physical attacks on UN personnel with the UNIFIL mission up in Lebanon, it's beyond the pale. So Israel does nothing but they're like the most unwelcome house guest you could ever have. You know, you've never seen, like the North Koreans don't behave like this. It is the rudeness, the arrogance, the abrasiveness across the board. So I'm, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all, because what Israel has accomplished over the course of the last, you know, 13 months now, since the start of their reprisals against the Palestinian people, is that they've alienated most of the countries in the world, who are no longer, some who before were supportive of Israel, had diplomatic relations with Israel, they're breaking relations with Israel. Then they're becoming more outspoken in their opposition to what Israel's doing. You can't escape the images of these dead children. They are murdering children on a daily basis, and excusing it because they're fighting terrorists. Those children aren't terrorists, but unfortunately, within the Zionist mentality, they can murder children, and it's okay, and it's not okay.
And how about the situation right now in the United States, Larry? Your opinion, what is the calculation in the mind of Netanyahu in terms of what's going on in the United States?
Well, I think he's emboldened with, I think it's a greater likelihood that Donald Trump is going to win. And Trump is seen as being far more supportive of Israel's quest to control, to dominate all of the land in Palestine as well as Israel. So I think they're making their bet. Hey, Trump's going to win, and we're going to get the green light. Now, that may be a foolish bet, because Trump, while being very supportive of Israel in theory, is not keen on expanding U.S. military commitments overseas, just the opposite, wants to pull back and wants to have a peaceful solution if he can. You know, he's all about negotiation. He doesn't want to alienate the Saudis and the Qataris. I think that they're banking that Trump will make things better for them. So Israel, you're not going to see, I think, any change in Israel's conduct over the next 2 weeks anyway.
Because I don't know if you saw J.D. Vance recently talking about the situation in the Middle East. He said that sometimes our interests with Israel overlap. When it comes to a bigger conflict with Iran, we have no interest in having a war with Iran.
Yeah.
And that's why we're not going with that plan.
Yeah, look, a negotiated solution is that, you know, neither Trump nor J.D. Vance want to see the United States get embroiled in more wars. But Trump really has become sort of the anti-war president, even though ironically he's supported by a lot of people who would be happy to get engaged with battles overseas. But, you know, let's just hope we dodge this bullet.
Yeah.
That we stay out of these wars.
Yeah, exactly. Larry, just to wrap up this session, in your opinion, right now, do you think the mindset after this attack, Israeli attack on Iran, the mindset in the Middle East would be to help Gazans? Because the Arab state didn't show any sort of that much of interest in having a direct solution, is something substantial when it comes to Gaza. But right now, with this attack just passed away, and how about the future for Gaza? How do you find the mindset of these Middle Eastern Arab states together with Turkey?
Some talk a good game. There's still a lot of tough talk, but I'm not seeing any action. I think we're going to see.
What do they need to do, Larry, in your opinion?
Well, for starters, they need to completely isolate Israel economically, which means cutting off Israel's access to oil. Turkey has is in a important position to do that. Countries of Jordan and Egypt, they need to break relations with Israel. They just said, no, this is what you're doing is unacceptable. But up to this point, they're bought off. Both the Jordanians and the Egyptians, they're bought off by the United States. So, you know, they're no better than prostitutes with respect to that. That'd be a step in the right direction. It wouldn't be an immediate solution. But to completely isolate Israel, where Israel's got to know that if they continue on this path, they're not going to have anywhere else to go. So, sorry about that. Got an incoming call. I guess I'm frustrated by the failure of the Arab Muslim nations to really do anything of substance. The only country still that's taking significant military action against Israel are the Houthis. You know, Iran is, you know, Iran's not going to expand into a direct war on behalf of the Palestinian people. They support the Palestinian movement. But Iran, I don't see either, you know, saying, okay, yeah, we're going to go to war with Israel. We're going to put our own country at risk in order to help the Palestinian people. They're not doing that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Larry, for being with us today. Great pleasure.
All right, my friend. We'll see you later this week.
Yeah. See you. Bye.
Okay. Bye.